Every exception is a confession. An Act for Missouri article on Amendment 5, appearing on the August 4th ballot. This is part 2 of our series on what the text of Amendment 5 actually says. Part 1, Using the Constitution to Escape the Constitution, is available at act4mo.org, along with the full text of this article, complete with background explainers and links to every primary source we cite. Lawyers who write constitutional amendments do not include stray lines. Every notwithstanding, every except, every shall not is there because someone anticipated a specific consequence and drafted around it. So instead of asking what Amendment 5's supporters say it does, let's read what its exceptions admit it does. The principle is simple. Drafters don't spend words protecting against consequences they don't expect. When an amendment carves out a shield for one party, the carve-out is the drafter's own admission that everyone without a shield is exposed. In a constitutional amendment, every exception is a confession.
Amendment 5 contains 4 of them. Let's take them in order. Exhibit 1, the Schools Clause, a confession of harm. If you've watched the ads running across Missouri, you've heard the pitch. Amendment 5 won't just eliminate your income tax, it will lower your property taxes too. 2 tax cuts for 1 vote. And it's that second claim doing the heavy lifting, because it lands on a number you can picture, the bill you pay every December. Now here is what the ads don't tell you. Buried in Amendment 5's own text is an exception, a single sentence about public schools, that makes that promise unlikely to ever be delivered. To see why, you need 2 minutes with the amendment's local tax machinery. Stay with us. It is your property tax bill on the table.
Amendment 5 forces a rollback on local governments. 12 months after the legislature expands the sales tax base, every political subdivision that imposes a sales or use tax must make a one-time cut to its local tax rates, its sales tax, its property tax levies, or its earnings tax, deep enough to give back 97% of the new revenue the expansion produces. And then comes the exception, written into that same subsection. No political subdivision shall adjust its local tax rates in a manner that results in any reduction in funding to any public schools within or serving such political subdivision. That sentence does more work than it appears to. Follow it through the machinery and it dismantles the ad's promise twice over. First, the biggest line on your property tax bill is excluded before the process even begins. Missouri school districts do not impose sales or use taxes. Their local funding comes overwhelmingly from property taxes. That means school districts are never even subject to the rollback trigger. And the schools clause then walls off school funding from every other subdivision's adjustments. Put the two together, the school levy, typically the largest single line on a Missouri property tax bill, often larger than everything else combined, is structurally guaranteed to be untouched. Whatever local tax relief this amendment produces, the biggest piece of your property tax bill is constitutionally out of its reach. Second, the schools clause rigs the menu against the rest of your property tax bill too. A local government facing the rollback must choose which of its 5 listed rates to cut. And the schools clause makes the property tax options the ones no rational official will pick. Property taxes are the very instrument public schools live on. Any subdivision that adjusts a property levy is walking into the one guarantee in the amendment backed by a lawsuit, that nothing it does may reduce school funding by a dime. Trimming its sales tax rate sits right there on the same menu, clean and litigation-proof. And consider what choosing the property tax route would actually mean where you live. Property levies are the funding backbone of the local services this amendment leaves unshielded. Fire protection districts, ambulance districts, public libraries, county road and bridge funds. A subdivision that takes its required cut out of property levies is taking it out of firehouses and library hours. A subdivision that trims its sales tax rate spreads the cut thin across every purchase in town. Between a choice that risks a school funding lawsuit and concentrates the pain on first responders, and a choice that does neither, the outcome is not hard to predict. Of the five options on the amendments menu, property tax relief is the one its own design makes least likely to ever be chosen.
You don't have to take our word for the gap between the advertising and the text. The legislature wrote the promise into its own ballot summary. Reduce personal property and other local taxes when local revenues increase. And Missouri's courts took it off the ballot. On June 5, 2026, the Western District Court of Appeals unanimously held that the legislature's summary was insufficient and rewrote it. The Missouri Supreme Court declined to disturb the rewrite 3 days later. The summary voters will actually see tells you the amendment would curtail constitutional limits on taxing goods and services. The ads are still selling the version the courts refused to print.
So hold the ad against the machinery one last time. The biggest line on your property tax bill can never be touched. The remaining property levies are the options every local government has the strongest reasons to avoid. Whatever relief materializes, if any materializes at all, will almost certainly arrive as a small trim to a sales tax rate, while your property tax bill stays exactly where it is. The campaign promises what the fine print forecloses.
Now step back and read the schools clause the way this series reads everything, as a confession. Ask the obvious question. If the rollback machine doesn't cut anyone's funding, why does one entity need a shield from it? The exception exists because the drafters know what their own machine does. They know that when a county or city is forced to cut one or more of several different tax rates to offset a sales tax windfall, the levy that gets cut and the funds that receive the windfall may not belong to the same people. The drafters saw that risk clearly enough to build a shield against it.
They built exactly one. Read the list of who is not on it. Fire protection districts, ambulance districts, public libraries, county road and bridge funds, senior services levies, law enforcement sales taxes. Every one of these is funded by the very instruments the rollback targets, and not one of them receives the protection the drafters deem necessary for schools. When Amendment 5 supporters point to the schools clause as proof the measure is safe, turn the clause around. It isn't reassurance. It is the drafter's own damage assessment, with a single name shielded and every other local service left standing in the open.
So the schools clause tells you two things at once, and both of them are about trust. It is proof the drafters knew their machine cuts local funding. They wrote a shield against exactly that. And it is a measure of what this amendment's authors do when they actually mean something. They write it down, in enforceable words. School funding got a written constitutional guarantee. Your property tax relief got a television ad. When the same document offers you both, trust the ink.
Exhibit 2, the marijuana exception, a confession of deliberateness. Amendment 5's fourth subsection requires that every sales tax rate written directly into the Missouri Constitution be cut. The logic is windfall control. Those constitutional rates ride on the general sales tax base, so when the base expands to services, they would suddenly apply to far more transactions and collect a windfall. The amendment orders their rates reduced by enough to cancel it, with the state auditor calculating the new, lower rates. The conservation sales tax rate, cut. The parks and soils tax rate, cut. And then, mid-sentence, an exception. Each rate shall be adjusted, quote, with the exception of the rate imposed under Article 14 of this Constitution.
Article 14 is the marijuana article. The constitutional sales taxes on marijuana are the only rates in the entire Constitution that Amendment 5 leaves untouched. We are not going to speculate here about why. There are plausible, even boring explanations. Article 14 has its own voter-approved structure, with revenue earmarked for veteran services and other programs, and touching it invites litigation. Fine. The point of this exhibit is not marijuana. The point is method. To write that exception, the drafters had to go through the Constitution tax by tax, make a list, and decide the fate of each one. Conservation. Cut. Parks. Cut. Marijuana? Spared. They found Article 14. They weighed it. They wrote 11 words to protect it.
Hold on to that fact, because it controls how you read everything else in the amendment. Nothing in this document is accidental. Whatever the drafters exempted, they chose to exempt. And whatever they left out, they chose to leave out.
Which brings us to the third exhibit. Exhibit 3, the Road Fund Exemption, a confession about your highway money. Why does a tax amendment reach into the transportation article of the Constitution at all?
Amendment 5 declares that revenue from the sales tax expansion shall be exempt from the provisions of Article 4, Sections 30B, 30C, and 30D. As we detailed in Part 1, those are the provisions that dedicate taxes on motor vehicles to roads and bridges, govern the transportation funds, and prohibit diverting highway user money anywhere else. Missouri courts have enforced them with unusual strictness. Even the interest on the road fund can't be diverted to general revenue.
You do not exempt yourself from a rule you never expect to trigger. The exemption is the drafter's admission that, without it, a real portion of the new sales tax money would constitutionally belong to Missouri's roads. Amendment 5 keeps it in general revenue instead, and, as Part 1 showed, there is no date in the text on which that exemption ends.
And here's where the deliberateness proven by Exhibit 2 pays off. Look at the precision of the carve-out. The amendment waives Sections 30B, 30C, and 30D, but not Section 30A. Why? Because Section 30A governs the motor fuel tax, a per-gallon excise the sales tax expansion never touches. There was nothing in Section 30A for the new money to collide with, so the drafters didn't waive it. They waived exactly the three sections their revenue would otherwise run into. Nothing more, nothing less. Surgical. These are people who account for every line.
So now consider the lines that are not there. Missouri's wall against toll roads is not a talking point. It is history, written by courts and voters alike.
In 1968, the Supreme Court of Missouri unanimously struck down the legislature's first toll road law, holding, in a case called Pohl versus the State Highway Commission, that road fund revenue is dedicated to free public highways and cannot be diverted or even made subject to diversion to pay for a toll road. Missouri voters then rejected statewide toll road amendments outright in 1970 and again in 1992. And when the legislature last asked voters to fund transportation through a general sales tax, 2014's Amendment 7, the drafters wrote the guarantee directly into the text. The Highways and Transportation Commission shall not authorize, own, or operate a toll highway or toll bridge while the tax was in effect.
That 2014 measure has a face you will recognize. The transportation sales tax was championed by then-Senator Mike Kehoe, who built the proposal around exactly those assurances: a frozen gas tax, and a promise that existing roads could not be converted to toll roads. "There's nothing tricky that we're trying to hide here," Senator Kehoe said when he introduced the concept. Voters rejected it anyway. 12 years later, it is Governor Kehoe's signature on the proclamation placing Amendment 5 on your August ballot, a far larger restructuring of how Missouri government is funded, reaching directly into the road fund's protections, with no toll guarantee anywhere in its text.
Is that omission theoretical? Consider what else happened in the Capitol this very session. In February of 2026, House Joint Resolution 194 was filed. It would have authorized the expenditure of state funds to construct and operate toll roads on Missouri's interstates and four-lane highways. The very use of road money that the Pohl case held unconstitutional in 1968. Notice why that idea had to arrive as a constitutional amendment rather than an ordinary bill. Section 30B and its companion road fund provisions are the wall standing between Missouri and toll roads, and only an amendment can breach it. House Joint Resolution 194 targeted that wall directly, and it would have exempted the toll revenue from the Hancock Amendment's definitions, including new annual revenues under Section 18E. Now hold that resolution next to Amendment 5 and count what they have in common. Both reach into the road fund protections, and both use the identical Hancock exemption toolkit. House Joint Resolution 194 died in committee without a hearing. But it tells you something Amendment 5 supporters won't. The toll roads idea is not a scare story from the past. It was filed, in writing, in the same building, in the same session that sent Amendment 5 to your ballot. Drafted with the same tools. Let us be precise about what we are and are not saying, because precision is the entire point of this series. Amendment 5 does not authorize toll roads. House Joint Resolution 194 affirmatively proposed toll authority. Amendment 5 only exempts qualifying legislation from the road fund's constraints. Whether that exemption could ever be stretched toward something toll-like is a genuinely open legal question. And here is the uncomfortable part. Nobody, including the amendment's supporters, can tell you what legislation the General Assembly will pass inside the 5-year window, or how creatively it might use the exemptions that window hands out. You are being asked to lower the constitutional wall first and find out what walks through it afterward. We are raising the question the drafting demands. These careful, thorough, line-by-line drafters found the marijuana tax, shielded the schools, and distinguished Section 30A from Section 30B with a scalpel. On the subject of tolls, a subject their own building took up this very session, and a subject the last such measure addressed with an express guarantee, they wrote nothing. If every line in this document has a purpose, what is the purpose of the missing one? Exhibit 4, the Hancock exemption, a confession about the math. The fourth confession is the quietest, and it may be the most important, because it concerns the amendment's central promise. Listen to how each side describes this plan. Opponents call it a tax swap, new sales taxes traded for the income tax. Supporters prefer grander language, a framework, or simply, the elimination of the income tax. And they lean on one reassuring phrase above all, revenue neutral. New sales taxes in, income taxes out, no net increase to you. Here is something worth knowing before we go any further. The words revenue neutral appear nowhere in Amendment 5, not once. Search the text yourself. The closest the amendment comes is a requirement that any sales tax expansion be offset in the same legislation by income tax cuts, at least substantially equal to the new revenue. Substantially equal is not equal. It is a lawyer's cushion, and no one can tell you today how much slack a future court will find in it. The neutrality lives in the talking points. The text guarantees only substantially. Now read what the very same sentence does next. It declares that the new revenue shall not be considered new annual revenue for the purposes of Section 18E, the Hancock Amendment's requirement that large tax increases go to a vote of the people. Here is what makes that exemption remarkable. Section 18E already nets tax increases against tax cuts. It counts only the net increase in annual revenues, less all contemporaneously occurring tax reductions. Legislation that is genuinely revenue neutral, new sales tax in, equal income tax out, in the same bill, would net to approximately zero under Hancock's own formula. It would need no exemption at all. The exemption has exactly one job: to cover the case where the new sales tax revenue exceeds the income tax cuts, the case where the plan is a net tax increase. That is the one scenario in which Section 18E would otherwise demand a public vote. And it is the one scenario the drafters made sure to immunize. They left revenue neutral out of the text, wrote substantially equal in its place, and then bought insurance against the gap between the two. In a document where every line has a purpose, ask what this one is for. Supporters have a ready rebuttal here, and you should hear it before they offer it. The Hancock Amendment is broken anyway, so the exemption takes nothing from you. It's true that parts of Hancock have aged badly. The 1980 revenue ceiling is tied to obsolete formulas and hasn't produced a refund since 1999. But Section 18E, the part Amendment 5 actually exempts, has a record worth examining, and the record shows a rule that works. Since 1996, whenever the legislature wanted a big tax increase, it either asked the voters' permission, as it did with the transportation measures of 2014 and 2018, both rejected, or it carefully engineered its bills to comply with Section 18E's own terms, as it did twice in 2021. Nobody tunnels under a fence that isn't there. The workarounds are the proof that the fence is real, and Amendment 5's express exemption is the final piece of that proof. Drafters do not waive dead letters. The full 30-year record, with citations to the state auditor's compliance reviews, is laid out on our website. So when someone tells you the Hancock exemption is harmless because Hancock no longer works, notice what they've done. They've pointed to the wounds in the taxpayers' protections as a reason to inflict another one. We'd draw the opposite lesson. The parts of Hancock that failed are the parts lawmakers found ways around. The part that still works, your vote on big tax increases, is the part Amendment 5 switches off. The pattern and the question of trust. Step back and look at the full list of who received drafted protection in Amendment 5. The public schools got a shield from the local rollback. The marijuana tax got a shield from the rate cut. The General Revenue Fund got a shield from the Constitution's highway earmark. And the Revenue Neutral Plan got a shield from the one provision that only matters if it isn't revenue neutral. The drafters anticipated their amendment's consequences with precision. And they drafted protection for everything they cared to protect. Your county's fire district is not on the list. Your library is not on the list. Your ambulance district, your road and bridge fund, your senior services levy, not on the list. The school share of your property tax bill can never be part of the promised relief. The toll guarantee that fit in 2014's text is missing from 2026's. And the public vote that would referee the math has been drafted out of the rulebook. In a constitutional amendment, every exception is a confession, and every omission is a choice. The only party this document drafts no protection for is you. One more thing, offered in the spirit of principle over party. The 40-year history of working around the Hancock Amendment belongs to no single party. The tax increases that provoked voters to add Section 18E in 1996 were enacted by a Democratic legislature and governor. The two recent bills engineered around Section 18E's text, the 2021 gas tax and the 2021 online sales tax package, were the work of the current Republican supermajority, many of whose members still serve in the General Assembly that sent Amendment 5 to your ballot. That is precisely the point. Constitutional protections exist because no majority of either party can be trusted with unwatched power over your wallet, including the ones you voted for. A supermajority that has already demonstrated its skill at slipping the leash is now asking you to unbuckle it. The request itself is the reason to refuse. And as we showed in Part 1, because all of this is being welded into the Constitution rather than passed as a statute, none of it, not the rollback, not the exemptions, not anything the drafters got wrong, can be fixed without another statewide election. For the full article, including background on the local rollback mechanics, the court battle over Amendment 5's ballot language, Missouri's long record of rejecting toll roads, the 30-year Hancock Amendment record, and links to every primary source we cited, visit act4mo.org. Part 1 of this series, Using the Constitution to Escape the Constitution, is available there as well, in both written and audio form. Thank you for listening.